What's the biggest thing stopping us from getting to 1 billion users on-chain? Why is user adoption so slow? And why aren't more Web2 companies and enterprises building on-chain? Well, according to Roy Hugh, the answer is simple. Gas. Not the stuff you put in your car, but the transaction fee that users and developers pay to transact and build on-chain. That's why Roy founded Lightlink, the L2 that is completely gasless. In today's tantalizing interview, Roy and I discuss what's stopping Starbucks, the Australian Open, and the Bank of Japan from building on chain. Why is crypto adoption so slow? I mean, OpenAI achieved 100 million users in a couple of months. Why can't crypto do the same? How does a gasless chain actually work? And how Lightlink's business model is similar to Amazon Web Services. Welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Hamilton, and I believe that on-chain is the next online. This is the opportunity, and I'm here to help you capitalize.
Crypto will go up more than 100x in both users and value over the next decade. If you're listening to this right now, you're extremely early and have an incredible opportunity to capitalize. At Milk Road, our mission is to make you smarter about crypto. That's why we're doing today's podcast and why we send you a daily newsletter for free. But if you're ready to level up as an investor, then let me tell you about Milk Road Pro. We crafted this resource for investors who are already smart enough about crypto and are looking for more actionable insights on how to invest successfully in one of the fastest growing industries on earth. Every week, we break down the latest trends, dive into tokenomics of popular and up and coming tokens, and get into the nitty gritty of market analysis, all to help you invest smarter. Plus, we have a private Discord community for pro members. It's like your backstage pass to the Milk Road crew, exclusive insights, hot tips, and live AMAs with our team. Now, if you're looking to level up as an investor, then click the link in the show notes below and sign up to Pro today. Don't let this bull market opportunity slip through your fingers.
GM, Roy, welcome to Milk Road Radio.
Thank you for having me, Jay. Nice to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Thanks for waking up so early. I know it's early in your time in Oz when we're recording this, and later in my time in the West Coast of North America. Let's start by taking a step back and looking at the L2 ecosystem and the Ethereum ecosystem from a broad standpoint. Why do we need another L2? And I'm asking you that question because I think it might tee you up to tell us a little bit of your history with Peller and how you eventually came to founding Lightlink.
Great question. When we started 6 years ago, there weren't really that much L2s around. We were building enterprise applications on enterprise blockchains, large NFT projects on layer ones, and we saw the limitations of the ecosystem in front of us, you know, enterprise blockchains being very disconnected from the rest of the innovation, it being something that you can't really participate from a public perspective. It was very siloed in terms of its economy, and therefore it didn't have the velocity or participation that many of these projects anticipated. Mm-hmm. In a way, it behaves like glorified databases, right? So we're also struggling ourselves trying to build enterprise applications on enterprise blockchains. And for layer one projects, when we built projects for, you know, like Tennis Australia with Australian Open, mm-hmm. with, you know, gaming projects like Red Village, we saw limitations of layer one projects in terms of you can't support a concurrent user base of more than 1,000 in most situations. When we did NFT mints, these projects were mint out in the span of minutes. And it took minutes because it just didn't have the capacity. It could have waited in the span of seconds, right? And within those minutes, transaction fees were skyrocketed to $100 per transaction. Mm-hmm. And many users who want to buy this project couldn't because they were being kicked out of the ecosystem from a technical perspective. So we really saw a lot of limitations between the two sides. And layer twos fit right there in the middle in terms of it had the scalabilities of enterprise blockchains. So it could service a lot of the projects that we're working on from a public transportation, from a retail participation, from tokenizing media assets. And it solved the scalabilities of layer ones. It sat on top of layer one, borrowed its decentralization, borrowed its security, and purely worked on scale. And you're right, there's a lot of different participants in this space. We started this layer two project, Lightlink, 2 years ago, and there weren't a lot of participants back then. Mm-hmm. But now we come across rollup as a service. I still think innovation in this space is fairly limited to a certain capacity when you look at L2B. Mm-hmm. Most of the technology out there were forks of Optimism, of Arbitrum. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. There are fantastic businesses, but there are nothing as outliers to that equation. People building their own stack, solving a problem, and trying to introduce additional innovation in this space, as opposed to strong leaders in this space, mm-hmm. pushing the industry forward. We saw a problem in the industry being, if we want to onboard the next 100 million users into this space, you know, which I'm sure you've heard many times, the infrastructure needs to support, right? Like, firstly, mm-hmm. to have the scalability from speed, from latency, from cost perspective, but at the same time, it needs to have the right economic model to support that growth. Mm-hmm. So all, and I guess this is where we're different. Our core unique proposition is essentially when you scale, when you're paying per transaction for something to happen, it doesn't scale to the ability in the scale of hundreds of millions of users.
Yeah, definitely not.
Because even if it's a cent, even if it's 5 cents per transaction, and you, if you're doing a million transactions a day, which is, you know, fairly normal for a website, web two business to, you know, operate within, and it just becomes really unaffordable for many different businesses out there, especially when the underlying token for the transaction is highly volatile. So when it's denominated in MATIC or ETH, that transaction fee could vary from 5 cents to 10 cents. And that 30% variance month on month, whether if it's up or down, becomes a real headache in a larger enterprise environment. So that's the problem we saw and we have heard when we've been building for the past 6 years, worked on 50 different projects across different industries. And that's the problem we're here to solve, introducing a new economic model. And I guess that's why we need a new L2, right? To go, hey, let's do things a little bit differently. Let's look at, in that mode, we can charge a monthly fee in fiat to provide a capacity, just very much like AWS, right? Mm. To run a payments or a ticketing or a sporting event, there's a bit of certainty in terms of transactions will go through, but also certainty in terms of how much it will cost for infrastructure spend. Mm-hmm.
So you want to enable businesses to be able to use blockchain and users, and then their users to be able to use blockchain and to do it in a gasless way. Now, we'll talk about how that works in a second and the subscription base that you're doing. I just want to go back quickly, though, just because you mentioned OP Stack and Arbitrum Orbit or the OP Superchain, whatever language you want to use to describe these. And I had this down as a question for later in the show, but now that you brought it up, I gotta use it right now, right? I gotta jump on it. So you started building Lightlink 2 years ago. Now, obviously, OP Stack wasn't available 2 years ago. Arbitrum Orbit wasn't available 2 years ago. So there was no option. If you were to build now, would you build on one of those existing stacks? Would you fork Optimism or Arbitrum or ZK Sync or one of them? Or would you still build your own tech stack?
Yeah, if we are doing what we're doing right now as of today, starting today, I probably won't be doing that, right? I'll probably be looking at, is there a horizontal capability we can build across all of these L2s to solve the fragmentation issue? I'll probably be solving a different problem.
Solve a different problem.
But right now, 2 years ago, we saw the problem and then we started building and we've gained quite a bit of velocity and momentum. And that's the problem we're trying to solve. And still, as of today, when you look at all the public blockchains out there, public networks out there, there isn't a solution like ours. So, And when we talk to larger businesses, it resonates with the pains that they've had when they had proof of concepts and experimentation on the blockchains.
Very interesting. Great answer. It's not what I was expecting you to say. I appreciate your honesty. The milkman loves honesty, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But we do get approached in terms of how can we white label your solution? How can we build a layer three, right? How can we work together? And as good engineer, you would try to be a little bit practical and go, hey, today, if we have all the tools that we have today, if we're building an L2 without the need of doing what we're doing, you know, of course, I would be part of the super stack, right? Supernet. Mm-hmm. But if we are building an L3, maybe it's a different consideration, but it's only we need that property as certainty in a new economic model, Lightning makes sense.
And so even though if Lightlink's main proposition is a gasless chain, can you explain to us this subscription model and how this gasless chain works?
Yeah, sure. So our premise is for Web3 to grow, we need substantial uptake and additional users to participate in this space. And the crypto native community is fairly limited in terms of, you know, number of users. And we need, you know, additional millions of users, hundreds of millions of users in this space. And we can't do that alone by onboarding users through MetaMask and seed phrases and things like that.
God, no, please get rid of seed phrases.
We need, you know, those like Starbucks to launch an app where technology is an infrastructure capability behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. So for that to happen, there needs to be many different components: account abstraction, better user experience, lower barrier to entry, higher scalability, all the things that we've been repeating to ourselves, you know, over and over again. But we're still waiting as an industry for that to happen. So we're rolling up our sleeves and go, hey, let's solve some of the problems that we see. And one of the biggest problems is barrier to entry, right? The need of a native token for a transaction to occur. Mm-hmm. So take Tennis Australia as an example. We've been building their Web3 capabilities for the past 3 years, and we built a lot of their digital collectibles. And every year we wanted to give out a physical ticket along with a digital asset, right? And we want the user to go up to the ticket gate and use that digital asset as their physical ticket, as their ticket to enter into the tournament. It's a sporting event with a million, you know, participants. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that because it's just really difficult to go onto exchange, buy Ether, and have an NFT ticket, ask the ticket validator to use that ticket, and the Ether gets consumed and you walk through the gates. That process would reduce the conversion rate.
Yeah, nobody would be attending the Australian Open.
Exactly, right? So we need a solution that you can use a ticket, just as simple as that. So by removing the native token, will allow you to have much more seamless interactions. And that's, you know, gasless. So again, like when you look at, observe the on-chain costs from layer one environments where you have, you know, $5, $10 per transaction into maybe less than a dollar into maybe, you know, in a matter of cents for a lot of the layer two transactions. Even 1 cent is still very troublesome. You know, it might not be that meaningful from a value perspective, but the difficulty is really high. So if we're trending towards zero, why don't we make a solution that's zero? And if, like, as of today, I'm seeing more and more gasless capabilities enter into this ecosystem. But we had this thought 2 years ago and have been building it for the past couple of years.
Interesting. So what you're saying is there's a big difference between fractions of a cent and zero. Even though from a monetary standpoint, nobody cares about that. A user wouldn't necessarily care about a fraction of a cent. We all pay fees when we buy things. We're pretty used to that. But the problem is the native gas token puts in a serious barrier to entry. So what's the solution for Lightlink? How does it work then? If I'm not paying, like, and we can maybe use the Australian Open as an example. If I'm buying a ticket to the Australian Open and I get some sort of digital ticket that's in the form of an NFT, although I hope the Australian Open doesn't call them NFTs anymore, because that's just a dirty word now and we all need to stop using it. And so then I get the ticket, but I didn't have to pay the fee, but somebody has to pay the gas. Like somebody has to pay the gas all at once. So how's it work?
Exactly. So the enterprise customer on the other end does. So they would use the infrastructure Lightlink as a infrastructure capacity like AWS, engage a subscription model, very much like a SaaS offering, and pay a monthly fee as opposed to per transaction fee. So it's kind of like you go barter for your milk every day, right? You don't do that. You go to a supermarket and supermarket will be buying it in bulk And therefore, you know how by transacting in bulk, you can do things a little bit differently, have a different economic model. So enterprise customers will probably be paying, you know, $1,000 a month or $5,000 a month for a certain capacity. And very much like all the cloud computing capabilities out there, they can provision that capacity, they can pass on that capacity to their users, they can forecast how many users they're going to have, plan a little bit extra, and then things will work. From a user perspective, lower barrier to entry, seamless interaction. From an enterprise perspective, more predictability.
Fascinating. Okay. I want to ask a few more questions, but I just want to make sure we share some high-level metrics of where you're at with Lightlink. You're in mainnet now. Your testnet was successful. Your mainnet's been really successful. You launched your token recently. I'm kind of throwing a lot at you, but can you give us just some high-level stats or metrics of what you guys have achieved so far so that our audience kind of has an idea of the scale of Lightlink?
Yeah, sure. We're a layer two, so the metrics resonate with other layer twos as opposed to layer ones because our metrics would be substantially higher because it has higher scalability, right? We've processed about 22 million transactions so far over the past 6 months or so. It's a decent number. We process over 100,000 transactions every day. We have about 400,000 wallets connected, so interacted with our chain so far. And on testnet, we've had over probably close to about 300,000 smart contracts deployed on the testnet. It just shows how much experimentation people are making with this technology.
And when you compare yourself to other layer twos, where do you rank amongst other layer twos?
Last I checked was a couple of months ago, we've just been so deep in building. Volume perspective, number of transactions that we do, we're probably number eight in terms of transactions per day. We're working really hard to get an L2B listing, so that should come through shortly.
Fantastic. Yeah, I use L2B regularly, and I actually noticed you guys weren't there, and I was like, come on, Lightlink, you would be on the list. You would be, like, as you said, you'd be high on the list. But so, hey, L2B, if you guys are listening, get Lightlink on there, please. Okay, so I want to understand how you think about your place within the L2 ecosystem. Initially, all L2s were very supportive of, you know, we're all on Ethereum and we're all chasing the same mission and the same objective. Now there's a lot more competition. So things are changing rapidly. When there comes more competition, people start to focus on different features. In your case, you're focusing on this gasless tech that allows people to do things that they can't do on other chains. Do you see Base and Optimism and Blast as competitors? Do you see them more as a complementary thing? How do you, or do you not even care about them and you're so focused on building your own thing?
Base is a really interesting one. They've certainly grown substantially with the backing of Coinbase and the capital and user base and reputation. And they've done a fantastic job. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from, and we're trying to improve based on the success of others. I do see a space big enough for all of us to participate, and probably not enough, right? When you have billions of users in the world, and you look at the amount of transactions we're doing on chain, and number of users we're interacting with as an industry, it's still a relative tiny percentage of the population that's interacting digitally, consuming social media or playing a video game. It's still a very small fraction of the market. So I question why that is, or how come the adoption rate hasn't achieved as widely as we all thought it would back in 2017. And it's just really interesting for many different reasons. But from a competition perspective, yeah, I think there's fierce competition. We're fighting for the same attention. We're competing for grants, issuing grants to the same game, like a game that we've worked with for a number of years recently got offered a grant to a competitor for, you know, being offered millions of dollars to participate on their chain. I would advise the game to take that grant, right?
But really?
but because in a way, if you're overspending ahead of revenue, there's only so much bets that you can make. And we've seen a very unhealthy ecosystem being established as a result. And then the quick peaks and troughs of these layer ones that came and went, right? As a result, overextended, overspent, and now they no longer have the capital to sustain a long-term growth. We're trying to do things a little bit differently. We're trying to provide value, to solve a problem, use engineering to solve a technical problem. And if you are struggling with building the fundamentals of your game, allowing users to come and play your game, right? That's why we built Lightlink, because, you know, clients of ours were struggling to scale through the games that we've built. I literally get emails, hundreds of emails from the systems that we have deployed to say transactions won't be able to go through because of the capacity of these chains. And when the fundamental problems are not solved, we try to do things a little bit differently.
I want to build on what you're saying, but I actually just first want to go back to what you said of why hasn't adoption happened as fast as we thought, just because you asked the question. So do you have any thoughts on why it hasn't happened as fast as we thought? Or do you maybe think it is happening at the right pace and we're all just impatient and we need to be more patient?
Yeah, I think when you look at OpenAI as a comparison, right, the velocity of user growth and how that user experience is really seamless. Mm-hmm. So I can sign in with Google and within seconds, I can start typing and experimenting, interacting with AI. And then it adds substantial value and I'm able to pay for a transaction using a credit card. So what I just spoke about is a great onboarding experience. And when you onboard to buy NFT as a example for the masses to experiment with, it's a really difficult user experience. So us as an industry, I was saying before, if we want to grow, it's really important to solve the fundamentals, to be able to scale to the scale of millions. Transactions fees don't cost hundreds of dollars or even tens of dollars. The infrastructure needs to support, the technology needs to have a better user experience. And I'm unsure about also reputation as an industry, right? Because what we're doing is so close to the value layer, you know, very different to ChatGPT, where I can send them money and it will send me more money back. Imagine that, right?
Yeah, imagine.
In the prompt, I can go send it $5 and sometimes it will send me $15 back.
Yeah. But
crypto as an industry is so entrenched in value. I have ownership in digital assets, which sometimes has an inherent value. So that naturally attracts a different school of participants. Mm-hmm. And larger enterprises will shy away from the industry exactly for that reason. So, but it's hard to not have that attribute because it's so closely tied with value.
Yeah. And it's one of the greatest attributes of blockchain, new capital formation that is accessible instantly around the globe is it's why Satoshi first created the Bitcoin paper. It is truly revolutionary, but it also, there's a big but, right? It also can lead to a lot of bad actors and a lot of scams and a lot of fraud and a lot of financial opportunity for the wrong people to take advantage. So it's got a little bit of every flavor of ice cream involved. So yeah, well, okay. I want to come back to, you mentioned when you first started Lightlink, you did it to solve your clients' problems. No better way to start a business is to solve your clients' problems. And I know that you've worked with Australian Open, you recently partnered with Animoca Brands, you've worked a lot with different gaming games. Is Lightlink a general blockchain that is going to serve all use cases in industries? Are you trying to focus on a particular industry or a particular use case? How do you think about that?
I was actually thinking about, took a bit of time to try to think about the big picture yesterday, and the direction that we're heading towards is accelerating world's adoption of Web3. It's something that a lot of people say, but it's something that we really take to heart and try to do. And one of the core strategy in realizing this vision is helping Web3 businesses, traditional industries, to adopt this fantastic new technology, right? So personally, I went to this industry thinking this technology will change our humanity. It's the most secure form of storing information. It anchors truth. When you're purchasing a property, creating a record, it's the permanent capability that makes this technology interesting. So I thought when we started in 2017, in 5 years of time, all of our permanent records will be using this technology because it's so obvious, right? Like, it's so much better than the Excel spreadsheet or a Oracle database and layers of layer security that we'll put outside of our SQL, or, you know, other forms of data storage. So why don't we put our driver's license, the marriage records or birth records on this technology? But in a way, we haven't got there yet. It's just really interesting. So what we're trying to do is create a capability where if you want to, as an industry, you can grow. You can use the technology and reduce the barrier to entry and accelerates the adoption for Web2 businesses to participate. So it's a general purpose horizontal infrastructure layer for the future of our internet. But in a way, the easiest uptake and the quickest uptake we've seen is in the gaming space, because game studios understand our value a lot better. They are much faster decision makers than the financial institution. Mm-hmm. And their audience understand the technology a lot better than many other participants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and gaming is an interesting one because I feel like we've all been saying gaming, gaming, gaming for years. Everybody's been saying, okay, gaming is going to be the thing that brings a billion users. Gaming is very casual. I mean, when Daniel Allegre took over at Yuga Labs, I was like, here we go. A guy from Activision, or is it Blizzard Activision, I think is where he came from. And he understands casual gaming. I was like, great, go make a casual game that is, you know, free to play. And if you want, you can bump up and you can have ownership and then you can sell and all these things that we all want. And it just, it hasn't happened yet. Now, gaming is, I have two takes on this and I'm curious to hear yours. One is, I actually think gaming is happening. It's just not in the typical mobile game that we all thought. It's more in the social-fi category. And that's why we're seeing Frentech and Fantasy Top and all of these more people gambling on influencers like they're on Fantasy Tops. Not something I am actively doing, and I'm guessing you're not doing it either. But so we are sort of seeing gaming. We're seeing gaming in a different way than we all think about it. And then the other thing I think about when I think about gaming is that it comes back to sort of what you've been saying the whole time, is the user onboarding and the user experience is just still not there because the tech is so complex, where you need a wallet, you might need a native gas token to play, you don't understand what the language is or why you need to have ownership of this item. Like, I just want to play this damn game, get out of my way, right? All these things. It hasn't yet hit its moment. I don't know if you feel differently or if there's some games that you guys are supporting that you're excited about that you can share with us. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think we've seen a substantial uptake in SocialFi. Now, we are working with a couple of games that's mobile first and operate in casual space that's gaining substantial momentum.
Are they? Okay.
Would underline, firstly, is Grapes. There's quite a few different games that they've launched and in the process of launching a few more. And every time you play a game, it creates a permanent record on Lightlink. And there are active, deeper conversations about integration that we're having at the moment. Another game is Tally Up, where I think millions of users participate and it's very casual. And they use crypto as a form of incentive to reward gameplay. It's a really interesting execution and they've done a great job. But the observation of why hasn't a AAA title embraced crypto is a really interesting one too. Because when you envision a studio like Blizzard Activision, for example, it makes sense for that company to protect its asset as much as possible. So that speaks to more like the innovation's dilemma, right? In terms of, am I going to introduce a iPhone to disrupt my iPod sales? Am I going to introduce a, you know, iPad to disrupt my laptop sales? That innovation dilemma, self-cannibalization, is something rarely seen in a larger corporate, larger, you know, AAA environment. It makes sense for you to build your moat as high as possible So my competitors don't come and take all my assets or, you know, buy all my assets and then resell it back to me for 2x. So because it's open, it's permissionless, it also has different characteristics that it's ripe for manipulation, right? So things that traditional gaming industry need to consider. But yeah, I think it's an interesting observation.
So when we talk about gaming, I always think about Immutable. They're a chain that's focused on gaming. I don't know how they have solved the gas issue, because like gaming in particular has a gas issue, because depending upon how you set up the game, and there's many ways to do it, a single player of a game could have multiple transactions within just one session of playing the game. So is Immutable a competitor then? Do you think about them at all, or are they just, you know, also focused on gaming?
We wanted to use Immutable for some client projects years ago. And when we looked at the technology, it was fairly limited in terms of its capacity to be able to deploy a smart contract. It wasn't something that we're able to do. And we had to interface with a lot of the technology of our APIs. And that limited the customization that we needed for the projects that we wanted to do on chain. We wanted to say, if you sent funds, you could get these two NFTs, and each NFT had these properties, and they would destroy themselves after, you know, 7 days. You know, business logic, that mm-hmm. just wasn't something that we're able to introduce. Maybe it has changed since then after their partnership with Polygon CK and revamped its a lot of the architecture, but it just didn't offer the capabilities that we need.
Let's move to talk a little bit about the business of providing block space. Understanding the business fundamentals is so important to understanding what is happening within crypto and within blockchain. You said yourself at the beginning, and it's true, that there is right now, we are building enough block space so that when we're prepared for all the users that we hope will come in the future. And with that in mind, there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of block space to be provided. Obviously, I understand you have your subscription model as a way of a form of revenue. How does Lightlink capitalize on this? What is the business model? How do you make money?
Yeah, great question. Very much like what you said, block space, selling block space is the primary source of revenue. Lightlink has two gas models. One is the public mode. So in the public mode, it just behaves very much like any other layer twos. You bridge over Ether, you deploy a smart contract, you consume Ether as a native token where you interact with the smart contract, right? The other is the enterprise mode, where we will charge enterprise a monthly subscription fee as a form of SaaS, and then we provide a certain capacity as a result of that service. So still fundamentally same, but a lot better from a enterprise adoption perspective. Mm-hmm. We spoke to Bank of Japan as a builder in this space, and their finance department struggled to buy Ether and then keep it and then share that Ether and transfer that internally into their tech team. And when their tech team runs out of Ether, it takes weeks for the finance department to procure. I mean, like, who do you send an invoice to? Think about it. For the top finance department to spend money and buy gas for an experiment, right? Like, how do they do it? Do they send the invoice and get a receipt? They will struggle. So that's the problem we've been hearing over and over, and we're trying to solve through our enterprise offerings.
I'm so happy you're trying to solve that. That is a hilarious problem to have, but so real. And that's stopping the adoption. We're just slowing ourselves down.
Yeah, it's true, right? Like, if you worked in the enterprise world, in a corporate job, if you want to procure, you know, thousands of dollars of something, you will go to your finance department, you ask for your manager's approval, and they would transact that, you know, for you, and they will need an invoice, they will need a receipt, right? So just fundamentals of business is really hard to be done on the existing crypto environment.
Yeah, let alone the fact that you're asking them to give you sort of an unknown amount because of the market impact and the price fluctuation and volatility of this asset that you need to hold in order to do your experiment, which also is an investment. So the finance department's like, well, now I have to register this as an investment. Like, don't, it's so easy for a CFO just to say no then, right? They're like, no, like, I don't want it. This is a headache for me. No, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the question, right? When you look at a typical public blockchain, the transaction fee is a multiplier of two numbers. The first is the price of the native token, which is market determined and depends on supply and demand. The price might fluctuate, you know, substantially from month to month. And the other is demand for block space, and that's the gas price within the chain itself. It's a multiplication of the two numbers that gives you the transaction fee, transaction value in a USD denominated value. And that's so hard to predict. And therefore, we try to remove that entirely.
Yeah, amazing. It's no wonder that enterprises have struggled, you know, and we've continued to see Starbucks, you mentioned them earlier in the show, launch Starbucks Odyssey and never made it out of beta, and they had to shut it down. And I'm sure this is probably one of the reasons that they did, because they realized all these, that those are just the financial challenges, let alone the user challenge, all the various challenges that are faced. Not to be bearish, like, we're, everybody listen, we're going to solve these things. You know, Roy's solving them and his team at Lightlink, you know, don't worry, we're going to figure this all out. But it's part of what we need to figure out, because otherwise, yeah, we're never going to get to 100 million or a billion people on chain.
Correct.
Let's talk about your token. You launched your token, I believe, at end of April. So just a few weeks ago now. Yeah. Congrats on that. It's always a big milestone to get to TGE. What purpose does the token serve in the Lightlink ecosystem?
It gives you ownership to the DAO, which again, for traditional industries, they'd be like, the what to the what? Right. But firstly, it gives you a percentage of ownership to the entire network. We're building it as a public utility. It's an infrastructure for everybody to participate, enjoy, and build on top. And it gives you the equivalent of the value of the entire network as we accumulate value, as we keep on building and onboard projects and utility and users and transactions. Hopefully, the combined value we create for our tokens would increase, and it allows you to share that value and share that growth. But at the same time, it gives you ability to decide, inform, to participate in governance. So when you are a token holder, you can submit a proposal for the DAO to consider. And as a DAO member, the token ownership gives you ability to vote, and the voting power increase as your token allocation increase. So you literally tell us where to go in the future, whether if we should be interoperable to OP or consider a different gas model, or to reallocate our treasury to fund more gaming development. All the decisions that we make, we're making it together.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Has there been any, I know you just launched it, so, but has there been any major votes yet or major proposals yet? Or has the DAO even officially launched?
Not yet. It's something that we'll move towards.
Any idea on timeline?
In the next couple of months.
Okay. Okay. Again, it comes back to the patience point that I was making. You know, we all get so used to in crypto, everything moving at such an incredible pace, and things also at the same time do take time. And so you can't do everything all at once. So congrats on TGE, and look forward to seeing what the DAO does once it gets going. We had Polygon on the show maybe like a few months ago, and we talked about Aglair when they launched that. And they talked about how they believe that every chain will be a ZK chain eventually, and that that's why they built the Aglair, so that they can support all of that and connect all those chains. Because one of the biggest issues that we are creating and the downfall of L2s is this liquidity fragmentation issue, and then fragmented UX. How do you think that will be addressed long term?
Yeah, there are lots of brilliant people looking at solving the fragmentation issue. I listened to many other smart people talking about the problem, and they helped me to visualize a future where you have one wallet, one token, there's no choice of networks. You go, I want to send USDT from wallet A to wallet B, and it's not a long hex number. It's from J to Roy, Roy to, you know, Dave, or whoever, right? Mm-hmm. And then funds will be sent. That's it, right? Just like how you do it in the real world. And the software behind the scenes is able to choose the most efficient form of that transfer. And when you need to conduct a DeFi transaction, it's whatever chain that gives you the highest yield, lowest fees, or the most secure, you know, thing. Maybe in settings, you can go, I want to be a bit more degen, and therefore I'm willing to accept with triple digit APRs. Liquidity will just, you know, move depending on the technology behind the scenes. So I have some friends who are actually building this space and trying to solve these problems as well. It's really interesting concept.
Very interesting. So you think there will be all these different, there will continue to be more L2s. And I mean, now we're seeing L3s. And so that will continue to happen. But there will be, I guess, more like bridging solutions or some sort of tech solution that does enable the user to not know and not care what chain it on. But all these chains will exist. So there is space for a lot of different chains to exist.
Yeah, one of the reasons why we are building Lightlink is we want to increase the adoption of Web2 businesses to participate. Mm-hmm. And then their user experience might be drastically different to the crypto native user experience. It might be through an app, just like the Starbucks example that you gave. And then within that app, we wanted to unlock Web3 capabilities. So you might have a payments wallet with this public transportation company, as example, one of the projects that we're in negotiations with. And suddenly you might have the ability to earn the interest on the remnant funds that you have in your wallet. And that's, you know, maybe a protocol in the Web3 space. And then maybe you can do a micro loan for a $10, $20 if you need to within the same app. From a user perspective, you don't need to interact with a certain protocol. It's just abstracted for you. And that's the vision I'm seeing and I'm hoping to bring onto Lightlink and our customers and the people that we work with. And in a way, just like what we've seen in the industry, cross-chain swaps are becoming more and more popular, right? Mm-hmm. And you're seeing hints of where we're going in the future.
Deep bow. I gratitude. That's all I can say. Thank you, because this is exactly the problem that we need smart people like yourself and your team members working on. So thanks so much for that. Before we wrap, I just want to give you a chance to talk about what's in store in the future for Lightlink. What's on the roadmap? What can we expect for the rest of this year or beyond?
We would have quite a few really important, significant Web2 partners onboarding. Can't wait to tell the world about it. And they will add substantial value to the ecosystem, bring on more users. And at the same time, just like what I spoke about earlier, we're setting up our DAO. We are using token as an incentive to encourage more participants into the network, as well as we will increase our security decentralization of the network by releasing validator nodes into the wild, where anybody as a participant can run these validator nodes in their desktop or laptop and contribute to additional security of the network. There are a lot of things that we're working on, and yes, stay tuned. We'll keep on building and we're doing interesting things.
Fantastic. Can't wait. We'll definitely keep our eyes peeled. I know you were telling me about some exciting partnerships that unfortunately we can't mention on today's show, but everybody listening, keep your eyes on Lightlink for the rest of this week. There's something big coming out and you're going to want to see that. Roy, how can people follow you? How can they get involved in Lightlink? Anything you want to show, whether it be hiring or whether it be your token. No, I'm kidding. Don't show your token. anything you want to show, the floor is yours to tell people how they can get involved.
Great. Thank you. You can find us on lightlink.io. We publish everything on our Twitter, X. Follow us on Lightlink Chain. I'm fairly easy to talk to, fairly accessible. You can find me on Roy Hui on Twitter. Send me a DM. If you're building this space, come and join our next hackathon. We want to challenge and look at what innovations that you can bring to space. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Roy. Thanks so much for joining. Thanks to your whole team over at Lightlink. Very excited about the future and everything you guys are doing. Thanks so much for listening in, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.